Now, the Great Escape Stage Company has done the War of the Worlds before, 5 years ago during the 75th anniversary. This is the 80th anniversary of the 1938 broadcast. Why do you think that that radio show done by Orson Welles and his company has such staying power?
Oh, that's an interesting question. I think because, first of all, it was written so well to begin with. We've studied the script repeatedly, and we see that there's just such an orchestration to it that it's a delight to perform. Let's just start with that. It's very artistically put together. Then, of course, there is the result of it, what happened, the legacy of it, and what the nation learned in 1938 from its broadcast, as perhaps ill-advised as that was. It created a stir. It created a panic among many, many people, and people realized that there needed to be some safeguards against such a thing happening. And to my mind, it's the ultimate example of fake news. It came out in 38, scared everybody when they didn't need to be scared. And even though the broadcast itself said that it was a play, people didn't catch that. And so as a result, you can look at it as a historical artifact from which there's much to learn even today.
Some recent research, a fairly recent book, whose author I interviewed, argues that the so-called panic after the broadcast might have been somewhat grossly overstated by the newspapers, which were in a competitive
thing. I've looked at that, and I think a lot of the current discussion is based on the fact that the legend of the panic itself was overstated over the years. If you look at the primary sources from 1938 and you look at the headlines, and we compiled a number of them for actual use during our performance, at the time it was described as a panic. There were lots of people who, say, went into police stations and pleaded for places to evacuate. There was one woman who did try to commit suicide, but her husband stopped her. There were a lot of reports about people supposedly driving off cliffs to avoid the Martians and things like that that were not true. And I think that the assessment in later years, looking at many of the false reports, said, well, the panic wasn't that bad. But for the people who experienced it, there was plenty of panic.
Now, you have added something to the original script for the play. Tell us a little bit about that.
The opening sequence largely puts the entire broadcast into historical context. What we try to do is explain how the broadcast came into being, who devised it, that it was Orson Welles' idea to dramatize it in this fashion, although it was Howard Koch who actually did the grunt work. And the play is introduced by the character of Howard Koch, who describes how he came to assemble it, how he chose Grover's Mill, New Jersey, as the place for the Martians to land, even though the original story by H.G. Wells put it in England. We wanted to explain to our audience that this was not just out of the blue. It came from somewhere, and that a number of people were involved in its creation. And then afterwards, we talk a bit about what happened to the people involved, how they really didn't realize it was going to cause such a furor at the time. Orson Welles himself thought his career was going to be over. But we get into what happened to Howard Koch and Orson Welles afterward and how their careers did not end because of this broadcast. In fact, both of them went on to a certain amount of fame.
Other than the additions that you've just been talking about, are you trying to reproduce, what actually went out over the radio or what's in the script? Because Orson Welles...
We are using live microphones, and we are using live sound effects in addition to recorded sound effects, much like what was done in 1938. So a lot of the things that the audience will see is those sound effects being created by the performers. Things like staticky radio and things like that, say the transmissions from the field, the sudden cutoff when the Martians attack, various effects that happen using different kinds of devices in front of our microphones in order to create these different kind of effects that you hear when you listen to the original broadcast. The explosions, the heat ray. The heat ray is a recording. We had to come up with our own version of it, but we think we successfully did that.
Orson Welles, though, was famous for not sticking exactly to his script. So did he depart from Koch's script at all?
That's difficult to say. The script that Koch published in 1970 matches pretty closely, if not exactly, the script that we hear when we listen to the original broadcast. So it doesn't sound as though Welles departed much from it when they were in performance in 38. So what we are doing is sticking to the script that was published by Howard Koch, with additions at the beginning and at the end to put it in context. And those additions were crafted by myself.
You mentioned recreating sound effects. How about the famous sound effect of the lid of the Martian spaceship unscrewing?
That's an interesting thing. We debated a lot about that 5 years ago. Because in the original broadcast, what was done was a microphone was extended into the men's room at CBS, and a jar lid was unscrewed inside a commode, and it gave that hollow effect that they were looking for. You listen to that, and you think, oh, that's a great effect. Okay. We started to play with the idea of actually putting a toilet on stage and doing much the same sort of thing in front of our audience, and we realized that it would be nothing but laugh-producing. And we did not want it to be funny. We wanted it to be dead serious. And so we just scrapped that idea from the beginning and decided that we would do something else. We found an alternative this year to the one that we used last year, last 5 years ago. And the audiences will just have to see what we do. We think it's also a little in keeping with what was done in 1938. It might even get people to smile, but they won't be laughing out loud. I'm not going to tell. You have to come to see the show if you're going to want to see that.
The cast for this performance tonight, as we're speaking, and tomorrow night, is somewhat larger than 5 years ago. Why is that?
Well, originally I had wanted to cast a larger group of people in the 2013 version. Unfortunately, two of the people they had cast had emergencies. The Martians seemed to be against us, and we lost two of them shortly before we could go on. So we ended with five people on stage. We divvied up the parts, and those five people managed to do that. This time we're doing it much closer to my original conception of the show.
And what is the experience like as a performer, because you're also on stage for this? What is the experience like reproducing this 1938 radio program?
I think it's a lot of fun. I think the overall sensation that we've all remarked about is the sense of historical legacy that we want to be true to. This was an extremely important broadcast, as I mentioned earlier. The nation learned a lot from it, and there's a reason for that. And I think our obligation is to show people exactly what it might have been like to experience this sort of thing. So we are trying to do it right. We even encourage people at the beginning of the show to close their eyes and just let their minds absorb what they're hearing rather than necessarily watch us, although you'll miss a few things if you keep your eyes closed. So as a result for us, we have a kind of a sense of not only fun, but historical need to do it right. So we redo things, we go back and forth and say, this didn't seem right, we got to go back, let's fix it. We did it again last night during our dress rehearsal, and I think we're going to be fine as we go out there tonight. I'd like to point out that we've got an 8-member cast, including myself. We have Gary Reed, Cameron Lake, Allison Miko, and a very important switch in that all the original characters were all performed by men in 1938. I've put a very important character now as a female, played by Allison, and she plays a couple of announcers as well. Nate Cox, Antonio Barroso, Greg Reitzma, and Tim Collins. All wonderful, experienced people in our radio shows. We like to do these at least once or twice a year. We've done a variety of things. It's a Wonderful Life. We did a version of The Day the Earth Stood Still, the actual radio version of it, which a lot of people aren't aware of. The House in Cypress Canyon, which we did last year. And we've done a variety of other radio productions, including The Lone Ranger and For Mickey and Molly. We love them. We really enjoy doing these.